Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation number 88, recorded January 23rd, 2013. Eric Kuhn, Founder's Card. Triangulation is brought to you by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, visit pond5.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get great and interesting and fascinating people who are actually doing something online or in the technology sphere, and we get to talk to them, sit down with them for an hour. Got a great guest for you this week, a guy who kind of changed the way textbooks were sold, completely disintermediated a business that really was a high margin business, and I'm sure made some enemies in the process, and has now created kind of a club for entrepreneurs called Founders Card. Welcome, Eric Kuhn. Are you in the Founders Thanks. Card space? Is that where that is, where you are right now?
I am. You can see part of the space behind me in chilly New York City, down in Soho.
What is Founders Card? Let's start right at the top.
Yeah, so the best way to understand Founders Card is to quickly understand my background, because Founders Card is the community that I wish I always had when I was building and growing the first company I started, Varsity Books, when I had started an internet company in the late 90s and basically went from two of us with an idea to a public company in less than 2 years.
Wow.
And then after the dot-com crash, we were faced with having to rebuild the business. And while we were public, you know, I always use the analogy of sort of rebuilding an airplane midair, and had to completely change the model in an attempt to get profitable, which we were fortunately able to do, but not without considerable ups and downs and starts and stops, and really just all the tremendous challenges and obstacles that pretty much any and every entrepreneur can identify with. And through that experience, and you know, after we sold Varsity Books about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was deciding what to do next and had this idea for reinventing the membership model, I thought, who better to do that for than entrepreneurs and sort of fellow founders? And I wanted to bring together two things that I wish I had when I was going through that Varsity Books experience. The first was a strong networking component, sort of opportunities to collaborate and meet and even commiserate with fellow founders and entrepreneurs going through similar experiences. It could be lonely at times being an entrepreneur, and we have amazing networking events for our members. But what I also wanted to do, and what we've sort of become known for, was to create an amazing collection of ongoing benefits for our members who are able to take advantage of, you know, whether it's exceptional rates and VIP status with airlines or hotels or business products like an AT&T or Apple, and to do it in a way that was sort of very curated and set apart and incredibly valuable and aspirational. That's what we were trying to achieve with Founders Card. So it's a long-winded way of saying we are an organization for leading entrepreneurs, giving them networking opportunities and incredible benefits and access.
But it's not a credit card, despite the word card.
It's not. We have a very cool membership card, which I will show you in one second.
Let me see it. Yeah, I want to see the card.
Grab a membership card.
Is it etched into titanium?
There we go. Should have come equipped
with
props.
It is metal.
Very cool metal membership card. That this is the key to everything. And you know, basically, this, you know, every one of our members has a customized engraved membership card where, you know, when they go to one of our hotels to get the Founders Card rate, they show that upon check-in. They're at the John Barbados store to get their preferred pricing. They pull out their their card. But no, we are not a credit card. And, you know, for us, we didn't want to be burdened or complicated with a sort of financial regulation and that side. We're strictly a membership organization for entrepreneurs.
You know, Varsity was there's a picture on the web of a founder's card, so you can see what it looks like. It looks beautiful. It's metal, perforated on the right. Steve Wozniak's business card looks kind of like that. He says he can cut meat with it. Can you cut meat with the founder's
card? I've been told. Yeah, there's all sorts of our members tweet the card and describe what they've done with it. It's pretty funny. On our blog we have some of those highlights.
Yeah. I want to talk more about Founders Club because some of my friends are members and it sounds like it's pretty cool, but also it's big. It's 2 years old and you've got 10,000 members. That's pretty impressive. But before we do, I want to ask a little bit about the Varsity Books experience, because that's kind of a classic startup where you saw, I take it, you saw the opportunity to do on the internet something, a business that would really change the way textbooks were sold.
Sure. So, I mean, this is back in 1997. If you could think pre-iPad, pre-digital, pre-all the rental textbook companies. You know, basically, all it was before we came onto the scene were the big bad college bookstores that everyone remembers that horrible experience. And so we were the first to have the silly, crazy, innovative, whatever you want to call it, idea to take that business online. It was back at a time when Amazon, if anyone can remember back then, they were strictly focused on, you know, general interest books. They hadn't yet expanded beyond that. And so what we were going to do, and you know, what we did when we launched, was to take that multi-billion dollar industry and give it an online solution.
By the way, were they happy to go along for the ride? Generally speaking, these multi-billion dollar industries kind of want to keep the status quo.
Oh, yeah. We
you got sued
We got sued. There would be conferences when these large bookstore, when the managers at the traditional bookstores would get together. I remember going to one conference shortly after we launched, and there was a whole seminar about how to compete with Varsity Books and all the threat. I think within, I don't know, about 2 months after we launched, we had a parade of textbook publishing CEOs and very large bookstore CEOs that would sort of descend onto our townhouse in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., where we were based at the time, to kind of check it out and figure out what was going on. Because, yeah, as, you know, you just said it. This was an industry that never experienced competition. Customer service was not their forte. And all of a sudden, there was this threat of a complete sort of mind-blowing, changing business that scared a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. The less competition an industry has, the more terrified they are when the internet kids come marching in. And as I remember, in fact, we have somebody in our chat room who was a campus rep. You used students to sell the books.
We did. So we deployed a whole host of marketing techniques. And, you know, like so many of those early internet companies, you know, that was, you know, sort of the downfall, if you will. Those models required heavy, heavy marketing costs. One of the more innovative things we did that was more cost effective was to employ a whole army of college reps on college campuses that would, you know, basically market in a grassroots way to students on the campus. But what we also did, like so many of those initial companies, we never bought Super Bowl ads, but we did pretty much everything else. And I think within the second year, we had raised, I think it was about $40 million of venture capital money, and then went public and raised another 40.
Wow!
But like so many of those companies, we were losing money faster than you could raise it. And so, you know, after we went public, it was February of 2000. We were the week we went public.
Oh, geez.
It was pets.com.
Yeah.
Probably remember them.
Yeah.
Us Varsity Books and a few of those others. It was like the tail end of when a consumer business, B2C company could go public. And
then it crashed.
Oh, it crashed. And it crashed quickly and ferociously. And within weeks, the stock price had melted. The whole sort of mindset, you know, if you can imagine, the going public is supposed to be a pinnacle, at least a highlight in a company's history. And you know, we had this jolt of adrenaline and excitement going public, and recently minted public company. And then almost it felt like immediately after, it was probably, you know, 2 to 6 weeks after, everything just started unraveling. Ugh. And it was a scary time because a lot of people didn't really know if it was just going to be a little blip and then right. things would bounce back. You know, one of the things that we were fortunate in doing was we made a pretty gutsy call to completely and radically change the business model to one that could get us profitable and allow us to control our own destiny. I remember the bankers, you know, saying, you can't do that. You know, we just went public. And I kept thinking, well, we have to do that. It would be irresponsible right. to not change course. And, you know, I think in our case, what we came up with, you know, because that original business required constant and heavy marketing dollars to sell a product that you had a deeply discount, just like so many of those companies. But what we figured out was that we wanted to partner directly with schools and have a sort of a built-in customer base like, you know, the official college bookstore. So we couldn't partner with the colleges and universities because, of course, those were run very profitably by the Barnes & Nobles and the Follettes. But there was an opportunity that we saw in the private high school market where private high schools, unlike the public school system, actually required the parents to buy books. You didn't get the book for free when you showed up day one. And so all these private high schools across the country had the challenge of having to operate bookstores on a scale that wasn't profitable and in a scale that, you know, they weren't going to convince a Barnes & Noble to come in and run it for them. So they were left doing it out of a closet or out of a cafeteria, and the math teacher would sort of collect the money. And they were selling $150,000 of books, not knowing what they were doing, basically. And so what we did was we changed our model completely from the B2C and kind of became a B2B company and allowed these private high schools to outsource their bookstore to us. And we set up virtual bookstores for them. And basically all the assets that we had, the technology, the relationship with the book distributor, the pick, pack, and shipping capabilities, we leveraged all of that to the new model. And what was so beautiful about the new model, we didn't have to not only did we not have to heavily discount, but our marketing went from $40 million every other semester to almost nothing because, you know, the schools, we worked with them on an exclusive basis. So it ended up sort of, we ended up figuring out a pretty interesting model out of, you know, one that wasn't going to have time to come to fruition. And we're able to then rebuild the business back there around that model. And it took some time, and it definitely took, it was a leadership challenge trying to convince everyone that we were going to be the .com that could, and we were going to change the business and kind of show everyone who thought we were going to go out of business that wasn't going to happen. And, you know, I think it took about 2 years for us to get profitable. And then some exciting things happened. We ended up building and growing and actually getting relisted on the NASDAQ. I think we're one of the few, if not only, dot-coms from that original period to go public, get thrown off the NASDAQ, and then actually get relisted. And then
you get thrown out when your stock price gets below a buck or whatever it is. That's right.
It's sort of a strange process. You have to be below a buck for a certain period of time, and then you go through this ridiculous hearing, and then in our case, we were able to build up the business and have a high enough market capitalization and stock price that we actually got relisted. And so that was fun.
That's awesome.
And
Pets.com didn't come out the other side. There's so many companies that was it. It was over.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as I look back on that experience, and there were, you know, all sorts of mistakes, you know, when I started it, I was 27, we went public, I was 29,
wow.
Made all sorts of mistakes and all sorts of things that I, you know, would have done differently. But in retrospect, I think the big decision of very relatively quickly sort of ditching that original model and figuring out a business model that could get us profitable and rallying everyone around that and then building up the business around that, was certainly something that worked out well. And I think, it was a pretty gutsy call. And I think it was something that, we were very proud of because it as you said, most of those dot-coms aren't around. They just kind of kept what they're doing. It's hard to, especially right after you go public, to just radically change something. And, it requires all sorts of unpleasant moves and decisions that and sort of getting out of contracts and doing things that aren't necessarily creating and building and sort of a different skill set from what that initial 2-year period required.
At your peak, how many employees did Varsity have?
So this is a fun statistic. We went from two of us when we started to about 225 or 250 employees when we went public.
Wow.
And then when we scaled down to, sort of build the business up again the second time, we scaled all the way down from 250 to 14 employees and then scaled back up to about 100.
What a roller coaster. Oh, my God.
It was insane. Insane.
and now, of course, I'm sure you counsel your new startup entrepreneurs and your founders that you're talking to not to look at this. But I can't imagine that the day you went public, you probably looked at your value. What was the peak? It's not real money, as you learned immediately.
Sure.
But what was the peak value? There must have been a moment when you go, my God, I'm worth millions.
I think when we went public, it was towards the end of that. So it
wasn't
weren't
such
the crazy valuations. But right. I mean, the company was the market cap was probably several hundred million dollars.
Jesus.
So it definitely was exciting and but I'll tell you what, it was the next 5 years of building up the company again and building it up profitably, which in so many respects was the more rewarding time.
Sure.
It wasn't, it felt real. Everything we were doing was very profit-minded. It was, sort of like building an old-fashioned business
right.
just online. And it was that experience that I really took with me when, we started Founders Card. And, that everyone is shaped by their own experiences and, your perspectives are shaped by, kind of what you go through. And it was that period of time of having to build a business when everyone thought we would fail, and we were a public company, even though the stock had crashed,
right.
We still had to file our reports every quarter and hold our conference calls. But what we did was we just hunkered down and identified the business that we thought made the most amount of sense, and then went after it with every bit the passion that we did the first 2 years. And, it was a little bit different of a rallying cry. We weren't saving the poor college students from the big bad bookstore, but we were, showing the world that we were going to be the .com that could survive. And that's what we rallied against.
And then kind of in the ultimate irony, in 2008, you sell to one of the companies that had the long knives out for you.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. They were... I think probably 2 months into launching our first business, we got all sorts of nasty letters from, competitors and interestingly, at the end of the day, that's who those kind of companies are the ones that are most intrigued. But we at that point we had a very strong presence in that private high school market. And we also had a strong technology. We had a good technology strategy that I thought was that they of course thought was interesting.
I want to talk about Founders Card, which has been a wild success, despite the fact that the requirement to get in is pretty steep. But we'll talk about that in just a second. Eric Kuhn is our guest of FoundersCard.com. Don't run over to the website and try to get in. We'll tell you what it requires in just a second. First, though, let's talk about a startup that I'm a big fan of. I love the guys who started this. They decided they wanted to do a better stock media marketplace, and they created something called Pond5. And this is good for you as a buyer, but it's also really good for the media creators. In fact, oftentimes, the Pond5 folks tell me, it's the same people. The people who buy stock photos and videos and illustrations and music and sound effects from Pond5 are oftentimes the same people who create them. So one of the reasons it's great for people who are selling stock media is it's, first of all, they pay the highest royalty in the business, 50%, and you set your own price. One of the reasons it's great to be a buyer there is this is royalty-free. So it means you pay once and you can use it in any production, anything you want. And look at the variety of content. 1.4 million video clips, 10,000 new ones this week alone. 8.2 million photos, 23,000 new ones this week alone. 753,000 illustrations, 86,000 music tracks, more than 250,000 sound effects, 2,855 After Effects projects. And these are great quality. You can go to Pond5 anytime. They always have a free clip you could take a look at, minus the watermark. I love the browser, too. It really is easy to find what you're looking for on Pond5. And we've got a special offer for you, kind of a way to encourage you to try the browser, to try the search, to get a sense of what Pond5 is like and to create an account. If you go there right now and create an account, actually pond5.com/triangulation, create an account there, you can download 50 free, royalty-free stock media files you can use in your projects, in your work. 50 of them, free! So this is a great deal. There's sound effects. There's just look at this beautiful video. Most of it is 1080p or higher quality. Look at the microwave countdown over there on the left, John. That's kind of cool. Now, somebody just made that video, and they put it on Pond5. They set the price. You buy it. They get a great royalty rate. And, you know, for the right person, that's a great piece of video. Pond5 is so much fun. I love going in there. Yeah, and just looking at the sound effects. If you're a podcaster looking for music, you know, theme music for your show, sound effects for your show, it's great. It's just really great. Pond5.com/triangulation to take advantage of those 50 stock media files that are yours to keep forever. If you're a developer for games, be great for sound effects, a designer, you know, you can get great starting points, great kind of things to think about. If you're a video or filmmaker, HD footage of all kinds of stuff, great travel shots. They really are shaking up the traditional stock agency business. It's an open, artist-friendly marketplace for professional content. You should check it out. Pond5.com/triangulation. Just get those 50 files now. So next time you have to do that PowerPoint, you'll have some great stuff to choose from. Thank you, Pond5, for your support of Triangulation. Eric Kuhn is our guest. Go ahead, Eric. You were going to say something?
Nope.
He just
I'm here.
He just said, hello. Eric Kuhn is our guest. He is the founder of Founders Card. You founded it a couple of years ago, and you already have 10,000. What is it, 10,000? What does it take to be a member of Founders Card?
So, you know, it's a little mysterious, but above all, we look for people who are connected to the entrepreneurial community. Most of our members are founders of companies, of course. You know, but increasingly we also have members who are just entrepreneurial in nature. You know, it started off because of my background. The way I started it was, I actually sent out, 100 complimentary memberships to, people in my past. And, you know, basically they were my test group.
Right.
I remember being really nervous when I went to the FedEx place to send them out and thinking, oh my God, you know, I've just sort of jumped in the pool again. What have I done? And, you know, that sort of experience, it just, you know, I've learned to just, I react well when I'm in a pressure environment, like a lot of entrepreneurs thrive off of. And so I just needed to sort of get it into a live environment with real customers. But, you know, 100 were people from sort of my past, and many of them were fellow sort of technology venture-backed founders. But as we've grown from 100, quite literally, to over 10,000 now, we've seen the growth in a variety of ways. We have certainly grown in terms of geography. While it's true that many of our members are clustered in sort of New York, the Bay Area, LA, Chicago, London, Austin, sort of cities that you would expect a lot of entrepreneurs to locate. Increasingly, we're seeing applications from entrepreneurs in Hong Kong, Tel Aviv, Iowa, Pittsburgh, you name
Iowa.
It.
Iowa.
everywhere. Yeah, I thought I'd throw that in. But
Pittsburgh, I get, but Iowa, really?
A little bit from everywhere. And it's really fascinating to see the trends. We had a period of time, because the way that we typically grow is organically through member referrals. And so we'll get an influential member who will live in Helsinki. And next thing we know, through his or her network, we have 40 members in Finland. It's really amazing the way that it's grown and how it's grown geographically. And I really tried to learn from all of my mistakes from the Varsity Books experience. It ended well, but there were sort of ups and downs and along the way. And, with Founders Card, the first 2 years of Founders Card, I really just wanted to focus the team on developing the strongest product possible. And so every day was heads down, focused on the two components, adding stellar benefits and adding fantastic networking events and opportunities for our members. And that's really day in, day out what we did. We listened to what our current members were saying, what they wanted. We tried to take a very different approach. I remember sort of all the membership organizations that I was ever a part of or familiar with. Before I started Varsity Books, I was an attorney for a year. And
1 year, ladies and gentlemen, one lousy year. Go. The happiest attorneys I've ever met used to be attorneys.
There you go. A reformed attorney. But, whether it's not to pick on the American Bar Association or an automobile or, some other sort of organization, remember the benefits programs always feeling very stale and always feeling like they were just kind of being thrown at the members, and they weren't really, they weren't fresh, they weren't relevant, they weren't inviting, and they didn't really speak to who I was. And with Founders Card, we very much wanted a dynamic and participatory environment. And so we set it up so that our members are part of every aspect of what we do, and that includes recommending and suggesting benefits. So we actually have members who are founders of companies that create benefits for our members. We have a lot of members who will always tell us the benefits that they'd like to see. We have thousands of members that have posted insights alongside of benefits, like the W Hotel in San Francisco, for example, or the Ace Hotel in New York. You go onto our website and you see insights from like-minded entrepreneurs. And it's really a very dynamic community that adds a lot of value, from that perspective. But and that's really been the approach. We've tried to incorporate and have everything center around the members participating. Of course, they come to our networking events, but every aspect of membership, we look to our members as sort of the guiding light and the whole purpose and kind of what we're doing. And then I mentioned our sort of secret competitive advantage there is that our members are basically our sales force. They're out there. They love membership. They love what they're experiencing. And so they want to share that with people that they think can contribute to and enjoy and benefit from the Founders Card community. And that's kind of how we've grown. Very differently than spending $40 million of marketing twice a year.
Yeah. You learned that lesson. I apologize to Silicon Prairie. Iowa is the Silicon Prairie, and it's the home to Dwolla. And in fact, the state government of Iowa accepts Dwolla payments, many of the stores, for cigarette taxes, for Starbucks. So I am wrong. Iowa might be the most wired state in the union. See? You learn something on this show. So when you came up with the idea, of course, I like the part where, okay, we're going to get all these entrepreneurs, and again, we're going to give them discounts. Did you also see the other side of the equation? Did it seem to you that, for instance, it would be easy to get deals for these entrepreneurs because they're so influential, they're so rich? What? I mean, is that the other side of the equation?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the opposite of the classic deal site. daily deal site.
Which is for everybody. You get your Groupon coupon for everybody. Right. And everybody comes in, buys cupcakes, and you go out of business because you can't make enough cupcakes.
Exactly. We're sort of the inverse of that. We have a much smaller but much more influential and deeply connected member base. And so, you know, our members are staying at our hotels. We have some hotels we partner with that we do over 1,000 room nights with annually. We have very large, well-known brands, you know, of companies we partner with that they just can't believe the results we get from them. And, you know, what's very unique is our member base, you know, while they're obviously traveling and spending more money than, you know, the typical person, they're a base that is very loyal. If they get a product, if they get an ongoing benefit from one of our partners, and usually those benefits match, combine two elements. They usually combine the best preferred rate with some sort of elite access or VIP status.
So everybody likes to be a VIP.
Yeah. So if you're a Founders Card member, you not only get immediate elite access on Virgin Atlantic Airways, for example, but you also get preferred rates on flights. And that formula has been very successful. Everyone wins. Our members are happy because they're getting a great ongoing benefit. And our partners, our benefit partners, are thrilled because they are acquiring very influential customers who not only are becoming active customers and very loyal customers to their brands, but they're basically also becoming brand ambassadors for them because, you know, who better to have to endorse a company, an airline within a company than the founder. And so from the perspective of our business, lifestyle, hotel, and travel benefit partners, to win the loyalty of our members has really proved golden. It has this echo factor because of the sort of influential nature of the member base. So it's a formula that is very different than that sort of daily deal type site. And another fundamental difference is we don't take any commission from our benefit partners. We made a decision that we want to be curators. We want to be able to do a partnership with a benefit, a brand, if it's right for our members, and to not be compromised by economics. And we're also in a position to be able to negotiate better terms because we're not taking a cut for ourselves. So it's a very unique model.
How do you make money? You don't take a cut?
I know, it's a ridiculously silly business decision. No, and I think to the contrary, we make our money. All memberships are paid memberships. It's a subscription model.
Okay.
And so every member pays an annual membership fee.
How much is it?
Our standard fee is $4.95, and it's actually going up to $5.95 next
a
year.
But that's like American Express Black. Well, not, it's not even a Black card, a Platinum card.
Yeah, I mean, our members, and what we've been able to do is we've been able to not only have aspirational benefits like elite status, you know, skip the line, or, you know, don't have to pay for checked bags, things of that nature. Or upgrades at hotels or late checkouts, complimentary Wi-Fi, things like that. But we've also been able to deliver the value. So our members are staying at hotels they otherwise wouldn't be able to stay at, or certainly would be paying, you know, $500 a night, and they're paying $200 a night.
By the way, people, I think, assume founders are rich. They're not necessarily, right?
Even if they are, everyone likes a deal.
Right.
Everyone wants
So Kevin Rose is a member. Leah Buskey is a member. Craig Newmark is a member. I mean, some of these guys have money, but then there's probably a lot of guys or gals just starting out with their. How do you get in? You have to be referred, right?
Well, there's two ways. So you need to get an invitation, and there's two ways to get an invitation. You either get an invitation from an existing member. Every member is allowed to refer 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way is you go to founderscard.com/membership. And you fill out that form, and we then selectively send invitations to, you know, to people that we think again would contribute to the community. It's really important that we maintain the integrity of the member base. This is very different than anything I've done. While Growing the member base and growing the pool of benefits, the collection of benefits, is what it's all about. It's only done under the lens of high quality. And it's important to us that our members, that we maintain a very high caliber on the member base, because that's what allows us to get these extraordinary benefits. It's what gives the events. And we have incredible events. We just had one during CES for our members at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Las Vegas, a fantastic event. We have one coming up in New York next month. We also have a incredible event at the W in Austin during South by Southwest, and these are member-only events. And it's important to maintain the integrity of the member base.
So people want to get in. Not only do they want the deals, but the access to some of these other founders would be fabulous for some people, right?
Yeah, I mean, in many respects, for many members, it's the events and the access and the networking that is the big part, and the benefits are sort of icing on the cake, elite status with Hertz and so forth. Those are sort of icing on the cake that goes along with it. But, kind of going back to how to get in and who gets in, we intentionally, one of the things I've always loved about the entrepreneurial ecosystem is that there isn't this elitism or snobbiness that pervades other industries where successful people only hang out and want to help other successful people. In the entrepreneurial world, I very much, love how first-time entrepreneurs and some of the best-known entrepreneurs can mingle, can help each other. Well-known entrepreneurs, experienced entrepreneurs love mentoring freshly minted new entrepreneurs. There's a special connection that entrepreneurs have. And I see that at all of our events. It's sort of the what we're trying to fashion in our networking events and opportunities is that sense. And so it would not be true to say that all of our members are, extremely successful 10 times serial entrepreneurs that, appear on the cover of Forbes every month. We also, of course, have many first time entrepreneurs and everyone in between. And that's the beauty of Founders Card, and I think in many respects the sort of that general ecosystem of entrepreneurs.
It seems to me now that you've got a model that works great with entrepreneurs, but that could also be applied to other groups. Are you thinking along those lines?
Well, it's on one hand, as an entrepreneur, you just want to sort of grow it, and you see an opportunity.
Yeah.
Just see something that's working, and you want to extend it. But one of the things I learned in previous experiences is when you've identified something that works well, you don't want to take your eye off of it and run the risk of defocusing.
That's tempting, isn't it?
It's highly tempting.
Yeah.
I think one of the...
isn't it what Steve Jobs said? It says the most important thing you can say is no.
I think that's right. I mean, I think saying no, knowing when to say no, and not getting bogged down on all of the, sexier, exciting partnerships or ideas that aren't going to work and consume resources and time. That's the great challenge of being an entrepreneur, understanding which ones are those that, are sort of aligned with your mission and what you're trying to accomplish, and to deeply focus and execute on those, and to be comfortable saying no. And so what we've done is, we say no a lot.
Not to new founders members, no to ideas, to diversification. You want to stick to your knitting. I see the same thing all the time. I have all these ideas of things we could do, but they would be a distraction.
Yeah, sometimes if you try too many things, or you try to be everything to everyone, you end up with nothing.
Right.
And I think there's a fine line between the sort of the strength and the weakness of a startup, and that has to do with focus, and it has to do with not defocusing. It has to do with recognizing opportunities that work, improving those, and focusing on them when they do, and avoiding temptation from all of the and every day we're getting introductions from people who want to be benefit partners or
introduction.
Yeah. And, and that's the fun part. And I love this part in a company cycle. When you first start, no one knows who you are.
Right.
And you're muscling and hustling to get in the door with everyone and, you know, calling up well-known companies and trying to convince them of to buy into your dream. And then, you know, slowly but surely, in our, you know, our case, it took a few years. And, you know, all of a sudden that changes. People that didn't want to work with you all of a sudden are kind of banging down your doors. And, you know, some of that starts happening, and that's really fun. And that's always interesting to watch. But, you know, staying true to that purpose, that mission, that focus, while, you know, it doesn't mean you don't constantly improve the product and iterate it and improve it. That's part of it. But it does mean that you say no to a lot of things. And, you know, it's sometimes people get bummed out on our team when, you know, we end up not trying a new idea or not doing a certain partnership because, you know, we think it's only going to complicate things or it's not going to end up helping us get to where we need to be. And so we've really just focused on quality and partnerships. That doesn't mean it has to be the most well-known brand, but it, you know, we love working with newer innovative partners as well, but we want it to sort of be in that sweet spot of what we think is going to excite and add value to our members.
One of the real challenges that companies like Groupon and Living Social face, Google too, I guess, is you got to have a huge sales force on the ground to generate all these coupons. I guess you don't have that problem.
Yeah, it's a very different sale when, you know, you go to an airline or a hotel because, you know, we have a proven track record of performance with a very well-known companies.
Right.
And it's also a very different, the economics of the equation are very different. We're not going to them and saying, you know, give us a third of or 40% right. of every transaction. We're going to them and saying, you know, we have this fantastic member base. Let's figure out how to structure an ongoing right. partnership that's going to add value to everyone. Right. And so it's a much different conversation. It's more of, you know, sort of a collaboration as opposed to a hard knuckle fought negotiation. And it's worked out well for all involved.
What's your biggest challenge?
Well, I mean, I think the unique challenge with, you know, every company has daily challenges. I think we've been very fortunate in that. I like to think I've experienced, you know, not much phases me when it comes to crises and different things that can occur in a company. I've sort of seen a lot of it in my past, but. One of the unique challenges with Founders Card is that there is probably some natural limitation to the Capital membership because if you think about...
You have to keep it quality.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think about what excites and what our members value, they value incredible events at fantastic venues with quality members. They value... best-in-kind partnerships, you know, immediately elite status, skip the line, VIP treatment, matched with a fantastic preferred rates. There are, you know, if you went to ABC Airline and said, hey, I've got a million members, how about upgrading them all to gold?
Yeah, that's
and,
not going to work.
You know, giving them 10%. they say, go fly a kite.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to work. And so I think there's a... There's a challenge, but it's sort of a reality that, you know, at some point, you know, you will have a waiting list. At some point, there'll be a natural cap. Now, we're certainly not there yet, but that's something that we closely monitor, and we want to make sure that we are smart about the right number. But, you know, right now, additional members, additional entrepreneurs are, you know, adding value to this very dynamic community.
Do you qualify by income?
So interestingly, no, we intentionally don't. I mean, some of the other entrepreneurial groups, some of the other, certainly, you know, credit cards require a whole slew of sort of financial requirements. We do ask for in the application, so it's a three-page application that does ask for information about the applicant's company and, you know, sort of where it captures information in terms of, you know, where they are and so forth. But it's not with an eye to excluding people who haven't reached a certain income level or a certain stature within their company. It's the application process is much more with an eye to achieve people who are connected to the entrepreneurial community. So that's kind of what we look for evidence of in the application process. We're not looking for people, you know, we're not asking for pay stubs, social security numbers. We're not asking for, no, we don't,
credit
we don't
check.
Do a, yeah, right. An yeah. IRS report. That's not us. But what we want to do, you know, we ask for LinkedIn profile because we want to look and see your involvement to the entrepreneurial community. We love people who are, and again, it doesn't, a lot of people sort of associate entrepreneurial community with venture-backed founder or a technology company, and that's really a misnomer. We have applicants every day who are, you know, they're a founder of a boutique PR firm, or they're a we have people who are freelancers. We have people who are in you know, physicians, founding physicians of medical practices. We really, you know, and that enriches the Founders Card community. We're definitely not looking exclusively for people at a certain, you know, sort of level of performance and or industry. We have, you know, people that are in the fashion industries. We have athletes.
Doesn't have to be tech startups. Correct.
Not at all. It very much is. There's, you know, small business owners. There are people that are, you know, entrepreneurial and deeply entrepreneurial in other ways. And so it's, you know, it's definitely not entrepreneur Founders Card equals only a founder of a venture backed technology company. That, of course, it is a strong component of our member base, but by no means is that the entirety of our member base.
You got to do a dating service, though. I mean, that would really.
I don't know. Sometimes you look for opposites, or sometimes it's better to have people that are, I don't know, too high strung entrepreneurs on all.
That's a bad idea. Take it from me.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's kind of a it's. I could see after the crazy roller coaster of Varsity that you were looking for something that would be fun and be a good startup, but also we just kind of works. And it seems like this is a great match between the founders who want to get to know each other and get these elite deals, and companies who would love to have these people as customers. I mean, it seems like it's one of those businesses that just does itself.
Yeah, I mean, if you are Lufthansa, for example, or Cathay Pacific,
you want these guys.
Your you know, your sales force is set up to go after and sort of sell to large companies, Fortune 500 companies, and investment banks, but you're not set up well to identify
right.
and partner with, you know, the who's who and the, you know, 15 person recently backed company that's going to be the next
Barclays
huge success.
Bank. Yeah,
you got
yeah.
it. And
yeah.
so,
and you get them, you get them early. That's the time to get them.
Yep, and with one partnership with Founders Card, they are basically accomplishing, you know, what would be a very challenging sales
sure.
from their aspect, and so that's kind of how we're able to deliver for our members benefits that you know, in some cases are even better than what executives at the very largest companies are able to get.
Yeah, very cool. What a great idea. Did it come to you in the middle of the night and you leapt out
no.
of bed and said, I have it.
It's the kind of thing when, you know, you sort of rack your brain trying to think of a new idea. You know, for Founders Card for me was in many respects a series of different epiphanies. It wasn't sort of just one. It was different things from that Varsity Books experience that I looked back on and said, you know, I wish I had that. Like, you know, I'll give you one quick example. When we were on our roadshow and going public, and we were staying in, you know, Four Seasons hotels, Ritz-Carlton, St. Regis, the nicest hotels. And I found out that, you know, our rates, you know, we were paying like $200 for rooms that everyone else was paying $500, $600, and we were getting upgraded. I was thinking, what's going on? And it, you know, turned out these investment bankers had negotiated these amazing rates and amenities for their employees and their customers. And you know, it always struck me as odd that it was the entrepreneurs that you know, I thought and to believe are the value creators, who better deserves these kind of benefits than entrepreneurs. And so it was different things from my background that kind of were lodged somewhere in my subconscious that when I was thinking of, or my conscious that when I was then thinking of the next thing to do, it was sort of a combination of putting the networking and the networking the way I wish it always was,
yeah,
with the benefits together in a, you know, a very dynamic community.
I mean, if you could, I mean, it's now in hindsight, it's obvious. If you could create a mailing list of 10,000 of the top up and coming young executives that are about to take over the world, that would be so valuable. And here what you have, it's kind of like Facebook, is people coming to you saying, yeah, can I get on it? Please, please, I want to be on that list. It's perfect. It's brilliant. Nice job.
Thanks.
Eric Kuhn, founderscard.com. And it's obviously a club that none of us will get to join, but we can look from afar.
Not true.
And I'll wave at Kevin Rose as he goes in that, you know, that elite line at the next Virgin America flight we're on together. Thank you, Eric. Great to talk to you.
Take care. Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye. Eric Kuhn, founderscard.com. We do triangulation every Wednesday. Right about, it's supposed to be about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And you can always watch live. We'd like it if you watch live. I often get questions and ideas from the chat room. Not today. They were having too much fun. But normally. If you can't watch live, well, you can always get it after the fact. On-demand audio and video available on our website, twit.tv/TRI, or everywhere that podcasts are generally found. Who's next week, Karsten Bondi? Jerry Pournelle would be fun. We're trying to nail him down. It's like nailing Jell-O to a tree. Yes, but once we're working on it, that will be a lot of fun. We do have some great people lined up in the future for triangulation. This is always so much fun because we get to talk to such interesting people. I thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation.